What does the resurrection of Jesus Christ have to say to us? It says that death does not have the final word. It says that God has made a way for the tragedy of the fall to be overturned and to be undone, for the grave to be defeated, for life to triumph.
Welcome to Encounter the Truth with Jonathan Griffiths. I'm Steve Hiller, and glad that you are with us today. Jonathan, I think many of us would recognize the fact that the resurrection is an important factor in the Easter story. But recognizing what the resurrection is actually saying to us, I'm so glad that we're going there today, because you believe it says all that and probably more, doesn't it?
I remember as a very young person, when I was young in the faith, thinking through the resurrection and thinking, you know, I understand why the death of Jesus matters so much. I understand why it was important that he died on the cross of Calvary to pay the price of my sin. But I just couldn't figure out why the resurrection of Jesus mattered so much. I knew it was meant to matter, and I knew it was meant to be impactful for my heart and for my response to Jesus. But I really grappled with trying to understand that as a young person. What was the significance? What does it all mean? What does it all achieve? And as I've gone on in the Christian faith and in the study of the Bible, I've come to see more and more that the resurrection is at the very heart of everything. Because if Jesus did not rise from the dead, we have no confidence that our sins have been paid for and that the Father accepted the sacrifice of Jesus. We have no assurance that there will be life beyond the grave. But because Jesus rose, we have an affirmation that his sacrifice was acceptable to the Father. And we have sure proof that there is a victory over the grave and there is life beyond the grave. The resurrection is at the heart of everything. And I hope we can explore that truth a little bit more in the message today.
Well, let's do just that. Grab a Bible, meet us in Luke 24 as we focus in on verses 36 to 53 today. Here's Jonathan with the journey complete.
I have a distinct memory from when I was a child of feeling confused, even a little distressed, over the whole matter of the resurrection. I can't remember exactly how old I was when this happened, maybe 9 or 10. I think I had come to understand by that time the basic meaning of the cross. I knew that it was important that Jesus had died for my sins. That truth had become precious to me, I think. But it dawned on me at one point that I didn't really understand the resurrection. I knew people spoke of the resurrection as being important. I knew that it was a major focus at church at Easter time. But I couldn't really see why it mattered all that much, why it was a cause for so much praise and so much joy and so much celebration. I kind of felt that the resurrection ought to be important to me. It ought to be precious to me, like the cross was precious to me, but I couldn't see it yet, and it bothered me a great deal. I remember it quite vividly. I remember going and asking an older Christian for help in working through it and understanding it. Well, that was the kind of 9-year-old me, maybe overthinking things a little. But I have to say, it's a question that I've returned to and chewed over and wrestled with quite a lot since. What is the meaning of the resurrection? And why is it so important for us and for the world? These are, of course, the questions that are in the air in these final verses in Luke's gospel. And as we observe the actions of Jesus and listen to the words of Jesus here in our passage, we actually gain very deep insight. We gain a framework for understanding the resurrection. Jesus shows us the essential truths that we need to reckon with if we are to understand and take to heart this great miracle of miracles. And the first thing that Jesus highlights for us about the resurrection, the thing that he goes out of his way to emphasize, is its sheer physicality. If we are to understand the significance of the resurrection of Jesus Christ, we need to see that it is fundamentally and truly a physical reality. Now, to say that the resurrection of Jesus is a physical reality, to many of us, that may seem a fact almost too obvious to state. Oh, of course it is, we say. What else could it be? But as we think about the physical, the bodily nature of the resurrection of Jesus, we need to bear in mind the fact that many, many people deny it. plenty of folk who claim some form of Christian commitment hold to a view of the resurrection of Jesus that is most certainly not physical in nature, that is not historical in that sense at all. Jesus is risen in the hearts of his followers, they may say. Jesus is spiritually alive, even if he remains physically dead, they might claim. That has been a very popular position within liberal Christianity for a long time, and it still endures in many churches and many contexts. A recent survey done over in Britain found that fully a quarter of people who call themselves Christians do not actually believe in a historical resurrection at all. And only 31% of people who call themselves Christians believe that it happened as the Bible said it happened. A few years ago, the Episcopal Bishop of Washington publicly denied the importance of the bodily resurrection of Jesus, insisting instead that what matters is our own subjective experience, the experience in our hearts of his resurrection. She said this, "To say that resurrection is essential doesn't mean that if someone were to discover a tomb with Jesus' remains in it, that the entire enterprise would come crashing down. The truth is that we don't know what happened to Jesus after his death any more than we can know what will happen to us. What we do know from the stories handed down is how Jesus' followers experienced the resurrection. What we know is how we experience resurrection ourselves." Those are remarkable words coming from a church leader. But the idea is common enough. The idea that the resurrection is a subjective and a spiritual reality, but not a physical one, and not in that sense a historical one. Now, I hope we all see the trouble with a statement like that. I hope we recognize that a statement like that is not compatible with orthodox historical Christian belief. But even if you and I might be inclined to reject such an idea out of hand, and I hope we are, the reality is that for many of us, much of the time, the physicality of the resurrection of Jesus just may not seem all that important. The big thing we may feel is that Jesus lives in me by his Spirit, is that Jesus lives in my heart. That day-to-day reality, that's the thing that counts. That's the thing that I really care about. Well, of course, that's a wonderful thing, and it's true. But the facts that we need to reckon with here is that Jesus is going out of his way at the very end of his earthly ministry. He's going way out of his way to emphasize this physicality. He's at pains to demonstrate it and to drive it home to his disciples. He is at pains to emphasize that his resurrection is not merely spiritual, but is physical, tangible, and historical. At the opening of our passage, Jesus stands among some of his followers, presumably the apostles and maybe some others, and he offers them peace. He declares peace to them. Well, that's a good way to begin an encounter. It's a gracious start. But Luke tells us that the disciples are startled and the disciples are frightened. They're inclined to think that it's a ghost appearing before them. And who can blame them entirely? Yes, they heard the promise that Jesus would rise again. They've heard the reports now that he is indeed risen. But now a man who was recently executed and very effectively executed appears among them alive in their very midst beyond the grave. What are they to make of it? How are they to react? Whatever the promises, whatever the reports they've heard, this is a big thing. This is an unsettling thing. Jesus knows what they're thinking. He knows what they're feeling. Of course he knows. And so he sets out to address their doubts and their fears, verse 38. Why are you troubled? And why do doubts rise in your minds? Look at my hands and my feet. It is I myself. Touch and see. A ghost does not have flesh and bones as you see I have. Touch me and see, says Jesus. Use your physical senses of sight and of feeling to evaluate my physicality. This is no mere spiritual, ghostly appearance. This is the resurrected me, physical, tangible, bodily. When he had said this, verse 40, he showed them his hands and his feet. And while they still did not believe it, because of joy and amazement, he asked them, "Do you have anything here to eat?" There's hardly anything more basic to human existence than the activity of eating. It's what sustains our physical bodies. It's part of the basic rhythm of life. And to give the decisive proof that his body is real and his body is tangible, Jesus now eats in the presence of his disciples. They gave him a piece of broiled fish, and he took it and ate it in their presence. I think that to see the significance, to feel the force of this moment, we need to stand back just a little and consider the bigger picture. Way back at the beginning in creation, God made a beautiful and a wonderful world, and he made us human beings to live in it and to enjoy it and to worship and glorify him for having provided it to us. Throughout the creative process, you'll remember that God declared again and again that his creation is good, 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 and very good. But we know the story and we know how it proceeds, how sin came into the world through Adam and spoiled things in a profound way. The world was marred, and the crowning piece of God's creation, humanity itself, was fatally damaged and sentenced to death. Now, that was the garden. And ever since the garden, that sentence of death has remained hanging over us. We human beings, we live for a while, we flourish for a while, and then our bodies begin to break down through age and disease, and we die. One way or another, we die. And in death, well, the creation is ruined. The creation is undone. God's masterpiece in humanity is defaced and destroyed. And it's a tragedy. You know, you look at young lives and all their potential and vitality, and sometimes a young life is cut short. I was just speaking with a friend, a pastor friend, over in the UK, leading a small church plant, a new church plant in central London. He had sent me an email just before Easter with the tragic news that a young couple from their church, just a year or two married in their early 20s, keen believers wanting to serve the Lord, arranging their lives so that they can serve the Lord, they were away on a vacation and had a terrible accident and were killed instantly. The press covered the story well, actually, and captured their Christian witness, but they published this lovely picture of this couple from their wedding day back in 2017, and it's just heartbreaking to look at it. Two young people created by God with everything before them, lives filled with potential, and in an instant, death snatches them away. Or you think of disease eroding and cutting short the life of a child or a parent or a sibling or a spouse, and life is cut short. Or you think of an older person with the experience and wisdom accumulated over the years, with networks of loving relationships all around them, with a treasure trove of life's memories, and you see them slipping away. You see them declining. You see them facing the reality of the death we know must come. And it feels so wrong, and it's so hard to face. Now, with all those painful realities in the background, and it is painful, with all the realities of life in this fallen world in the background, what does the resurrection of Jesus Christ have to say to us? What is its message? It says that in his grace and in his mercy, God has taken extraordinary steps, costly steps, to redeem and to restore that which has been defaced and destroyed. It says that God is not done with what he has made. It says that he has not given up on his creation. He has not given up on his people. It says that death does not have the final word. It says that God has made a way for the tragedy of the fall to be overturned and to be undone, for the grave to be defeated, for life to triumph. Not in some mystical harps on clouds, angels wearing bedsheets kind of a way, but in a physical, tangible, substantial, real way.
You're listening to Encounter the Truth with Jonathan Griffiths and a message called The Journey Complete, part of our series, An Invitation to Paradise. And we're going to pause here, but we'll get back to the message in just a moment. Well, if it's been a minute since you've been to the website, I hope you'll take a little bit of time and check that out. When you come to encounterthetruth.org, you're going to find links there to social media, including YouTube. And if you're on YouTube, I hope you'll like and subscribe our YouTube channel. That way you'll be updated anytime we post new content on there. But at the website, you can also check out our weekly e-devotional and sign up for a newsletter. You're going to find all that and a lot more when you come to encounterthetruth.org. Well, let's get back to the message. Again, we're in Luke chapter 24. Here is Jonathan.
The resurrection, it tells us that Jesus has gone through death and come safe out the other side, physically, personally, tangibly, victoriously. And the resurrection then gives us the sure and certain hope that he has the ability and he has the power to carry us through death and safely out the other side. I mentioned that young couple recently killed in that awful accident. Both were from Christian families. And it's lovely to read in the press statements that both families have made. One of the young man's relatives wrote this: "Our loss of Toby and Millie," that was their names, "is inconceivable. But we are confident of the joy they are experiencing right now with Christ on high. We continue to grieve, but we will never lose sight of this living hope." In the secular papers, wonderful to see. Millie's father, who's actually a pastor himself, said this and was widely quoted in the mainstream media: "Toby and Millie were passionate about their Christian faith, and we are being sustained by the same sure hope of Easter resurrection." Now, I guess that to many who read those words of hope, to many reading the newspaper the following day after the accident, those statements sounded like fairy tale delusions. Nice for them, they need something to hold on to, don't they? But no, the historical reality is this: Jesus Christ rose physically from the grave. He quite literally conquered death. And because Jesus rose bodily, there is substantial reason, there is real reason to believe that those two young people are safe with their living Lord now. There is every reason to believe with confidence that the promised day of resurrection will come, when their mortal bodies will be renewed, raised, resurrection, even as Jesus was raised. See, our resurrection hope as Christian believers, it's not a fairy tale hope. It's not that our loved ones are going to live on in our hearts or something like that. No, our hope is that believers who die in Christ are safe with their risen Lord. Our hope is that we will one day be raised bodily, even as he is raised. To make sense of the resurrection, to see its significance, we need to understand that it is physical in nature. Next, to make sense of the resurrection, to see its importance, we need to understand that it was promised. Verse 44. "He said to them, 'This is what I told you while I was still with you. Everything must be fulfilled that is written about me in the law of Moses, the prophets, and the Psalms.'" The disciples are just reeling from this whole series of events that they've witnessed. Their confusion is not only about the miracle of the resurrection itself, it's about the fact that their Messiah had to actually die in the first place. The death of Jesus and the resurrection of Jesus, they are a unity of events, and they're treated as such in the scriptures. The resurrection is only relevant and necessary if Jesus first died. And this package of events, it is still entirely baffling to the disciples, to the apostles. The two disciples on the Emmaus Road earlier in the chapter, as we saw last week, they've had a tutorial already in the plans and the purposes of God. But now a wider group are beginning to hear. And Jesus wants them to see that all this was planned. All this was set out long ago. All this was promised. Verse 45. "Then he opened their minds so they could understand the scriptures. He told them, 'This is what is written. The Christ will suffer and will rise from the dead on the third day. Some things in life come as a nice surprise, totally unexpected. Maybe you get a letter in the mail one day telling you that a long-lost relative is leaving you an inheritance. You had no idea it was coming. Very nice surprise. We had an email the other day, not one of those. The nursery where we send our son came into some funding, and as a result, they were going to waive our fees for the month of May. Nice surprise. Very welcome. Totally unexpected. The disciples were obviously surprised by the resurrection of Jesus. It seemed to come out of the blue for them. As the reality dawned upon them, no doubt they were delighted by this unexpected turn of events. They had assumed that the cross was the end of the road for Jesus and for his mission. But the resurrection, it turned all that on its head. It transformed the situation entirely. But what Jesus wants them to see now is that his resurrection is not some out-of-the-blue surprise, some unexpected gift from the Lord, some last-minute twist in the plot line. No, Jesus wants them, and he wants us, to see that his resurrection from the grave is actually the outworking of the grand salvation plan of God. It's the outworking of a plan set down in the scriptures over the centuries. He wants them to see that the expectation of both his death and his resurrection is woven into the very fabric of the Bible. The very arc of the salvation story points to this moment, leads to this moment, finds culmination in this moment. Now, to really take this on board, I think we may need to actually reorient our thinking about the Bible and the way in which we read the Bible. It's not just that Jesus Christ is where things happen to end up at the end of the Bible story, you know, so that the earlier plans of God and things that he tried to redeem the world and to bring salvation, they didn't really work out. And so now he's trying this as a kind of last ditch attempt. No, if we're reading scripture properly, we realize that from eternity past, God planned and purposed to send his son to redeem his people. And the whole of the Bible story anticipates this great event in a whole host of ways.
We do have to pause the message right there, but we'll continue this message called The Journey Complete on our next broadcast. If you ever miss a program, come and listen online. Our website is encounterthetruth.org. You can stream the program or download an MP3 for free. You can also listen if you have the Encounter the Truth app. That's free. You're going to find that at your app store, or again, come and listen through the website at encounterthetruth.org. Encounter the Truth is listener-supported. That means we depend on your financial generosity to keep Jonathan's teaching on this station. And as you give a gift of any amount this month, Jonathan, you have picked out a book called The Case for Easter, written by Lee Strobel. And how would you envision somebody using and reading this book?
Well, I've got two uses in mind for this book, and I hope that this will hit home for many of our listeners today. First of all, for the Christian believer who wants to be reassured and reconvinced of the historicity of the events in which we place our trust as believers, I'd love you to get hold of this and go over the evidence for the resurrection. You know, we don't believe in myth and legend. We are believing in historical reality that is conveyed to us in the Word of God, but is grounded in real history. And I'd love for you to be convinced and reconvinced of that. And then for the person who is not yet a convinced Christian believer, but is engaging with the evidence, who wants to find out more, you need to know whether the resurrection of Jesus Christ actually happened. And I think this book is going to be a real help to you in persuading you of the evidence for the resurrection, which is real and substantial. And I'd love to get this book into your hands if that's your situation. And of course, for the believer who is thinking of friends and family in that place, hey, get a hold of this book and give it to your loved ones that they might read it this Easter.
Well, the book is called The Case for Easter. Our thank you gift to you is you financially support Encounter the Truth this month. The phone number to give a gift, 1-833-99-TRUTH. That's 1-833-998-7884. Or you can give online at encounterthetruth.org. You can also write us at Encounter the Truth, 2176 Prince of Wales Drive, Ottawa, Ontario, 2KE081. Or in the U.S. at Encounter the Truth, 215 North Arlington Heights Road, number 102. Arlington Heights, Illinois, 60004. For Jonathan Griffiths and our producer, Mark Bretta, I'm Steve Hiller. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll join us next time.